This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Shazana Mokhtar in studio today with Philip C. and Tan Chen Lee. It is Tuesday, the 17th of May, 7:36 in the morning. We are turning our attention now, though, to ongoings or going-ons that happened last week. Last week, U.S. President Joe Biden played host to ASEAN leaders in Washington, D.C. as part of efforts to reaffirm America's commitment to the Southeast Asian region, which has come under question during the Trump administration.
Washington announced more than $150 million in initiatives to drive U.S.-ASEAN cooperation, and the two sides also pledged to elevate their relationship to a comprehensive strategic partnership. But the absence of any announcement on the Indo-Pacific Economic Framework was seen as a missed opportunity by some observers, particularly in the light of China being the regional economic heavyweight via the RCEP Treaty.
Separately, the Malaysian delegation led by Prime Minister Datuk Sri Ismail Sabri touted the U.S. visit as a success, with the establishment of a bilateral working committee to deal with long-standing labor issues being one of the main headlines coming out of the visit. But for more analysis on the outcome of these multilateral and bilateral meetings, we speak to Elina Noor, Director of Political and Security Affairs at the Asia Society Policy Institute. Good morning, Elina. Thanks very much for joining us. What do you see as the key takeaways from the special summit? Let's start with ASEAN. Now, some observers view that the U.S. fell short in its efforts to reassure ASEAN of its commitment to the region. Do you agree with that viewpoint?
Hi, Shazana. Good evening from Washington, D.C. So I think the main takeaway from the summit was that it was special in a number of ways, right? So the first time a special summit has been convened in Washington, D.C. between the U.S. and ASEAN. It's the second ever summit for both countries after a period of, the last one was 2016, I believe. And it was really a gathering that was quite symbolic despite the fits and starts in the beginning. If you remember, we were supposed to have had this meeting at the end of March, but that fell through. And the fact that this was a meeting at the highest levels, I think, signaled commitment on the US's part to remain engaged with ASEAN and ASEAN countries. But as you pointed out, I think there were a number of expectations that fell short. $150 million commitment to a region of 10 countries with 650 plus million people, it seems paltry compared to the billions that have been dished out to Ukraine. Now, granted, Ukraine is in a war, but you know, the U.S. touts ASEAN as really important to its Indo-Pacific strategy and for its own merits. But unfortunately, I don't think we've seen that so far with this offer of $150 million to the relationship.
So how significant is the decision to elevate U.S.-ASEAN relations to a comprehensive strategic partnership? And what changes would this bode for the relationship?
Yeah, so I think, I mean, for policy wonks, I think we can dissect the meaning of whether a partnership is strategic or whether it's comprehensive strategic, and that will shine some light on how deep and wide the relationship is, right? But the U.S. has been engaged in the region for a really long time. And if you look at the history of the relationship between both sides, it has been both deep and wide. I think what is expected of the U.S. is to step up its game, particularly in the economic sphere. And you mentioned the IPEF, the Indo-Pacific Economic Framework, that's set to be announced within the next few months. The idea is that I think that President Biden will announce it on his trip to Japan. But even with IPEF, I think expectations have already fallen short, given that market access is off the table. That's something that a lot of ASEAN countries are interested in. And initially, there wasn't very much inclusion of all the ASEAN member states, not even half the ASEAN member states. And so the point about engaging ASEAN as a grouping, as a whole, really has not been matched in practice compared to the rhetoric of supporting ASEAN unity that we often hear from the US, unfortunately.
So, Lena, let's focus on bilateral ties. You know, Prime Minister Ismail Sabri had deemed the working visit to the US a success. Do you think that was the case?
I think it was a case of success in terms of symbolism. To be honest, I don't know if there was very if there were very high expectations to begin with. Really, all sides saw this as an opportunity to cement those ties in a demonstrative way. That, I think, was achieved. Now, granted, there were some smaller wins. There were some MOUs signed between the Department of Commerce as well as MITI. And there were, of course, these bilateral initiatives that have been seeded for future growth. But the real crux of the matter really is that the fruits of that labor will hopefully be manifested in the next few months. And hopefully with the comprehensive strategic partnership to be announced in November, we'll begin to see some of the more substantive benefits of the visit this time around.
So you're in Washington, D.C., Alina. So I'm curious about how Washington views Malaysia, particularly in light of the political instability that we've experienced in the country over the past 2-3 years. Does Washington see Malaysia as a reliable partner in the region? And does it have any concerns in terms of our policy direction and how it affects U.S. interests?
To be honest, Malaysia doesn't figure very highly in the Washington scene. It's on the radar, but Malaysia is not seen as a strategic partner in the same way as some other countries in Southeast Asia are, particularly Singapore and Vietnam. Part of that is good and part of that is not so good. I think the reliability of our foreign policy is not a concern for the folks in Washington. But there is some observation about how politically stable our system will be over the coming months and into the next year when elections are supposed to be called. So I think it's basically a wait and see attitude in Washington. Malaysia is there. It's a reliable enough partner, but whether both sides, the US and Malaysia, can really strengthen the bilateral relationship depends a lot on our own, the Malaysian political scene over the next few months.
So the Malaysian foreign minister met with his counterpart from the Myanmar NUG on the sidelines of the Washington, D.C. summit, the first ASEAN country to do so. What do you see Malaysia trying to signal? And will other ASEAN countries follow suit?
My sense is that Malaysia is trying to signal how important it is to engage with all stakeholders in Myanmar and not just the Tatmadaw. And this is in line with the ASEAN 5-point consensus. It also sends a signal that that the Tatmadaw should not be the only party to be engaged with, whether within ASEAN or beyond ASEAN as a grouping. So I think it was actually a commendable effort to have this meeting between the foreign minister and his NUG counterpart, if you will. It may not incur the pleasure of the SAC, the Tatmadaw in Myanmar, but I think it's really important to have that signal sent. I don't know that this act will be followed suit by other countries. They have different priorities, obviously, and different interests to keep in consideration. But perhaps there are one or two other countries in ASEAN that may see the benefit in also engaging the NUG either on the sidelines or in a more formal setting in the near future.
Alina, thanks very much for speaking with us. That was Alina Noor, Director of Political Security Affairs at the Asia Society Policy Institute, giving us some takeaways from Prime Minister Dato Sri Ismail Sabri's visit to Washington, D.C. last week, and also just the feel of U.S.-ASEAN relations at this moment following that rather special summit.
I think the $150 million U.S. dollar commitment really reflects the commitment, right, which is paltry at the moment. So really, the money isn't doing the walking or talking here.
Yeah, and I also have the same feeling as you feel, because $150 million US dollar is compared to, say, Chinese commitment of $1.5 billion US dollar, and also United States own $40 billion dollars aid to Ukraine. It's a very small sum.
It's paltry.
So I guess that seems to be the overwhelming perception at the moment. Whether this is going to change in the weeks and months to come, we do know that the US is supposed to launch the Indo-Pacific Economic Framework in the near future. Whether that will make a difference, we'll wait and see. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.